Next Chapter Podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, everybody?
Yo, that is Come Around by MIA. Dude, when I heard that song for the first time, I was working out. It stopped me in my tracks, and then I listened to it 50 times over the next 3 days. It is one of my favorites. It's also from a 2007 sophomore record, Kala. It's number 393 out of 500 on the 500 with Josh Adam Myers. I am the king of fleece. It's beginning to look a lot like Thanksgiving. Man, I'm excited. Hope you guys are too. If you don't live in America, man, you are lucky because we are COVID infested. It's everywhere. My dog's got COVID. My coffee's got COVID. Donald Trump Jr.'s got COVID. Everybody got COVID. COVID is the new Chipotle. It's everywhere. I hope you guys have a great holiday. I am currently in Maryland with my family against the CDC regulations, but I've already had COVID. So, you know, I can fucking, I'll lick anybody in the police army and be fine. I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. I hope you guys have a great holiday weekend. Don't let the world get you down. It's a beautiful place. And the music that we're listening to, man, that should be helping you feel good about the world. Also, we want you guys to make the podcast theme for the 500. Submit your version of what the 500 should sound like to open the show, and we'll let our Patreon members vote on it. The grand prize winner is a one-year subscription to the Patreon Club, where you're going to be getting the soon-to-be DeShekels audio documentary. I am making a documentary about DeShekels with interviews with all of the people that were involved, fans, friends, everything. And you can get that all on our Patreon. I got a second podcast that we're going to be dropping very, very soon. We keep saying that, but we're going to do it. I promise you. Just join the Patreon. Support the show. And you can do all that and see all the details at our website, the500podcast.com. And if you want to submit your music for the theme song, send it to 500podcast@gmail.com. MIA. Let's talk about her. MIA is one of those artists that even when her song Paper Planes was everywhere, there was something that I was attracted to. I don't know what it was. I am attracted to her as a human being. I mean, I think she's extremely attractive, but there was something cool about her. So let's find out about this record. Released on August 8th, 2007 on XL and Interscope Records, produced by MIA, Blackstar, Diplo, Timbaland, Morganix, and Switch. This is the second album. British rapper, singer, producer, and activist, MIA. She was born, I'm going to fuck this name up, Mathangi Arul Pragazam. And because of that, she was nicknamed Maya in London, England on July 18th, 1975 to Sri Lankan Tamil parents, but moved to Jaffna in northern Sri Lanka when she was 6 months old. During the Sri Lankan Civil War that began in 83 and would rage until 2009, Maya's father became a revolutionary political activist, which forced her family into hiding from the Sri Lankan army and separated them from her father for years. Despite living in poverty, she grew up learning art at Catholic schools while avoiding soldiers who would randomly shoot into the buildings. For their safety, her mother moved her and her younger brother to an abandoned house in South India where her father would sporadically visit, although she was told it was her uncle to protect them all. After the family moved back to Sri Lanka, the war got worse and Maya's school was destroyed. Right before Maya's 11th birthday, her family moved back to London as refugees when she was 11 years old, which is where she learned English despite having terrible dyslexia. Her father stayed and became a peace mediator between the sides until 2010, which caused a strained relationship with Maya. Her mom became a seamstress for the royal family and raised Maya and her brother on a modest income despite them living in the rundown Phillips Bridge housing estate, which is basically a British version of the projects. On top of the slum-like conditions, Maya was one of only two Asian family in Phillips Bridge, so they received rampant displays of racism. However, the late 80s hip-hop music that she was exposed to there had an impact on her. After high school, Maya attended Central St. Martin's College of Art and Design and graduated with a degree in fine art, film, and video. While in college, Maya got turned onto old-school punk and the newer Britpop and Electro Clash. She became friends and eventual roommates with Justine Frischman, the frontwoman of the popular Britpop band Elastica. Justine asked Maya to design album and single covers for Elastica and then to join them on the road to video document their tour. The opening act was Electro Clash artist Peaches, who showed Maya a Roland MC-505, a self-contained digital music workstation referred to as a groove box. With Peaches' encouragement and Justine's MC-505, Maya first started experimenting with music, which is really cool that she learned that from Peaches, because Peaches has one of my favorite songs ever. Sucking on my titties like you wanted me, calling me all the time. Blondie chipped out my Chrissy behind his fine all the time. My teacher's the Peaches. What happens in the lecker of schmacka? Lecker. After a brief trip back to Sri Lanka and a failed attempt to film a documentary about her cousin who was missing in action, she returned to living in the Acton area of West London. She merged both and started using the acronym MIA for Missing in Action. Justine helped MIA write and record a 6-song demo inspired by Electro Clash, Dancehall Jungle, and World Beat. In 2003, an independent label pressed up 500 vinyl copies of her single Galang, and besides finding an underground following in clubs on college radio and at fashion shows, the recent explosion in file sharing and social media sites like MySpace built MIA an almost instant fan base. She was signed to XL Records and made her debut, A Ruler, named after her father. Her visual style portrayed a heavy, militaristic, and activist vibe, and her stark and jarring music described the politics, war, poverty, crime, and turmoil that she had witnessed both in London and in Sri Lanka. And by 2005, she quickly became a rising critical success, going on to work with Missy Elliott, playing a bunch of festivals, and touring with LCD Sound System, who we just did, and Gwen Stefani, who we're not gonna do. On the wings of all that acclaim, she was prepping to follow up with her second record, Kala, named for and influenced by her mother's struggles. She was unconcerned with hits and just wanted this record to be different, difficult, confrontational, and anything but easy. By this point, she was 30 years old, had an apartment in Brooklyn, New York, and after returning to London, after completing a tour of Japan, she had intended to go back to the U.S. to do most of the album with popular hip-hop producer Timbaland. However, after visa issues that profiled her as a possible terrorist due to her family's connection to Sri Lankan guerrillas, she was forced to record all over the world. Two of the producers from her first album came back, including her pre-famous recent ex-boyfriend Diplo and her main collaborator Switch. MIA and Switch bypassed a conventional studio routine by recording anywhere they wanted using Apple's digital audio workstation Logic Pro on a MacBook Pro laptop with a microphone. Months after finally getting her visa issues sorted out, she returned, but only ended up with one Timbaland track. The music was more aggressive and sample-heavy than her debut. In addition to the fusion of electroclash, hip-hop, punk, dub, dance, and world beat music, like all different sorts of Brazilian, Caribbean, African, and Australian, she added extensive influences from South Asia, including samples from Bollywood and Tamil movies. The lyrical subject matter, again, was very politically charged and reflected MIA's thoughts and concerns relating to the Third World, as well as the street culture of Brooklyn and Baltimore. The album was as much a world party as a protest and a call to arms. Nonetheless, it went to number 18 on the Billboard Top 200 chart and a number 1 on the Top Electronic Albums chart, while also topping it for the year. Plus, Paper Planes was all over Top 40 and a sleeper hit the following year. MIA was the first Asian artist to be nominated for both a Grammy and an Oscar in the same year for Paper Planes and her song Osaya from Slumdog Millionaire. She performed at the Grammys 9 months pregnant. She's badass, man. She is badass. A very outspoken political activist, a humanitarian, and a supporter of many charities. And recently she received the Member of the Order of the British Empire for her service in music from the royal family. And my guest today has not received any of those orders, but she's a good friend of mine and very, very funny comedian, Miss Ali Makovsky. Ali is an incredible comic, and she is the host of Resting Bitch with Ali Makovsky. And when I heard this record, I immediately knew she would be my guest. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to The 500 and listen free on all platforms. And if you want to do something for me, go on Apple, go on Stitcher, leave a 5-star rating, and leave a review. Do it for my birthday. That's all I want. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Go to my website, joshadammyers.com, for all my shows. I'll be in Austin December 11th and 12th, and I'll be headlining in San Antonio on December 10th. And I'm doing shows all throughout Los Angeles. If you're in Texas, I want to see you there. Email the podcast, 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group run by Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to our website, 500podcast.com. Well, there's nothing left to say, but here we go now with 393, Kala by MIA. Holla. All right, so truth be told, so like I started listening to this record, and there's a song on it later that we're going to talk about that reminded me of you so much that it's not even fun. Like, I immediately was like, oh my God, this is, I could just hear Ali Makovsky singing this. And so then I asked you and you were like, dude, I was just listening to MIA. So do me a favor, take me through your history with MIA.
Okay. I also want to know what song
we're
going
to get to.
Okay.
We're gonna, and I'm going to play it and everything because it's, I literally heard it and I could just see you. I don't want to ruin it yet.
Okay, okay. So MIA, wow. My first experience with MIA, I don't know if I should be ashamed of this or what, but was from The Hangover, because in The Hangover, they played Paper Planes in the movie, and I feel like that's when I heard about her. I heard about the song. That song was like off the charts after that movie, and it was everywhere after that, you know. And
it was like Chipotle.
Yes,
it was everywhere.
It was Chipotle, Sri Lankan Chipotle. So yeah, I listened to that a bunch, and then I don't know, there's something about MIA where she's one of those artists who's very successful but also has like still some obscurity to her, where like I don't think her life is completely controlled by fame. Like, she can kind of slip in and out and not make too much of a scene.
If MIA was at Gelson's right now, people would just walk right by her and be like, excuse me for a second, I gotta grab these wheat noodles.
So I think she's kind of made it in that way, but I think in that way it's interesting because she's not necessarily like a radio top hit, you know? Like, I feel like it's just a few songs that have really blown up. And
what are the other songs though? Because Paper Planes 100%.
Actually, it might only be Paper Planes. It's like a radio hit.
Paper Planes, it was massive when that first dropped. It just was like I remember from The Hangover too, but like it was just everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
everywhere.
All right. So you get into this because this is also 2007.
Yeah. So when The Hangover came out, it was 2007, which is when that album came out with the song on it. I was in seventh grade.
Oh, my God.
So, it's you know, it's like played at every school dance. That was like the song, you know, and everyone does the hand movements, like, you know, I fly like Peppa Gay Hat, and then the gunshot.
Dude, I was at Big Wang's, and I'll never forget this moment. There was this hot server, and they were playing it like over the loudspeaker as people were like drinking and watching sports. And she did exactly what you said, and I've never forgotten that because she was so hot. She did the cash register.
And then the bang, bang.
She blew on her finger, put it back into the satchel. I was like, oh, my God, I'm
before, in love with this. Before we had like the Soulja Boy dance, we had the Paper Planes dance.
Wow. I know the Soulja Boy dance, but I don't know the Soulja Boy dance.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
But. I'm also very into the Soulja Boy dance. But yeah, so I mean, I was in seventh grade. It was a very formative time in my life. Unfortunately, I think that that's the bummer with me and MIA's relationship is that I was too young to like be interested in good music.
Yeah. What are you listening to in seventh grade?
Anything that's on the radio, just radio hits. Like I'm very much like I know a lot now about various artists. Like if I'm out and there's like a cool dude and we're on a date and he's like, have you heard of like this band that he thinks is obscure, like Neutral Milk Hotel?
Ooh.
I was on a date yesterday, so that was fresh in my brain. It's like, yeah, I know a lot of different artists, but I only know whatever their most popular song is. Yeah. So unfortunately, I wasn't like old enough to do, or I guess I was old enough to do my own research on MIA, but it was just never something that I was like, I need to dive deeper into this. Until recently, I went to go, my friend rented out a private AMC theater.
Yeah.
And we all went to go see Shrek. Great movie.
Great movie.
Film.
Yeah.
Especially during
pandemic. When I saw her face, brown, 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 and I'm a believer. Ach, donkey, how are you doing?
You should do the Shrek soundtrack on here. Is that one of the top?
I don't think it's on the list, yeah.
That's unfortunate. It's a great album. But my friend was driving us, and he was, like, playing MIA, like, a lot of different MIA songs, and I just remembered how good she is and how it's such a bummer that I didn't spend more time listening to more of her songs besides Paper Planes.
So, but then I asked you...
And that was the craziest thing, the timing.
So you got to, like, deep dive into this now.
Yes.
Sorry, so how did you feel about listening to it this go-round compared to being 7th grade Allie?
Oh, my God, it's so good. I also, during the pandemic, went into a big Diplo phase, and I was watching, he has this interview at Harvard with like the students at Harvard, and he's talking about like his upbringing and how he started by like finding all of these different albums in London, and he would bring them back, and he worked with MIA when she was like pretty new. And
they dated when she,
but he slandered her name.
Did he?
In the New York Times article that Lynn Hirschberg wrote, it was very like anti MIA.
Look at you doing a little
I did
bit
a little
of
bit
research.
Of research.
I love that.
I did
people
a little bit of
prepared.
Research. I had so many tabs open on my computer of like MIA interviews, and I was like, you know, one's enough.
There's only so much you can read.
Yeah.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station. It was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles, The Wrath of the Buzzard, PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
So you listen to it this go around. See, what's funny about me with MIA, and you mentioned Diplo, is so I lived in Baltimore until about 2007, and I saw Diplo blow up because Diplo spent a lot of time in Baltimore with the Baltimore club scene. I was friends with a guy, I don't know if you know. My friend Naeem, a.k.a. Spank Rock.
Okay.
Have you heard of Spank Rock?
No, but I like that name.
Spank Rock made an album in about 2007, and it's basically this, but not with the, not as like deep, not as revolutionary, not as like her, like MIA's lyrics are like for real, like punk rock, like anti-system.
It's so crazy because they're so like nuanced in a way. They're not nuanced, but when you're listening to it with the type of like effects that she uses and like samples and stuff, you're like, oh, this song's just about like boys and getting money and like fuck all that shit. And then you look deeper and you're like, oh, it's about like war and genocide.
Exactly. So this style of music was in my life for a big section because I was going to the clubs. I saw Naeem just completely blow up. Like, and then I remember Galang Galang. I remember when that came out. That was like the hit off of, that was the song that kind of like broke her. She made that, that was the first song. They printed a bunch of copies of that and they kind of got that out. And then she made the first record. And then that is what kind of got her on like critics' lists. And so this, of course, is her second record. And much like you, it was straight just paper planes.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything else. But then I'm DJing at the strip club living out here. And some girl requested $20.
I was just about to say, that's the song that got me back in. Because my friend was like, this song is so good. I heard it for the first time and I was like, what? How is she using that song in this song and making it so different and good?
Yeah, so I think, so for me, this is really, much like you, just like the first like deep dive into this record. I knew I was going to like it. Like, I knew immediately, I was like, there's something about MIA that I find extremely sexy. And there was something really cool about her. And I think this
And that's why you thought of me.
No, oh, I've said this to you. I said this to you at the Comedy Store. I said, you're one of the coolest people I know. Like, that's, I don't think you realize.
I don't think you know that many cool people then. I think I'm cool, but not like.
You're not, listen, you're not Miles Davis, but there's something.
I haven't done enough heroin for that.
It is true, but you know, you can start now.
But COVID's young, you
COVID
know?
COVID is young.
We got some time.
But there is like, you know, there's something that I looked at her, even though I didn't know her music, I just felt like I knew where she was coming from. I think I knew that she was doing something that was being influenced by many different styles of music.
Yeah.
And then also like basically taking her whole culture that she grew up with and not like, and just using that as this like jumping off point for saying like, here I am, this is where I'm from, this is what I experienced. And you're not just getting a dance song, you're getting like a real autobiographical like take on what she experienced. So yeah, because it's like, I mean, immediately when you start listening to this music, you're like, dude, this chick had like a real like revolutionary background. Like, you know, her family during the Sri Lanka Civil War that began in 1983 and would rage until 2009. Her father became a revolutionary political activist, which forced her family into hiding from the Sri Lankan army and separated them from her father for years. So once I read that and then listened to the record, I was like, oh, and then you start listening to the lyrics and you're like, you know, this all makes sense. So let's dive into the record, okay?
Okay.
So let's play the opening. Peter, play the opening to Bamboo Banga. This is a great way to open the album. It kind of sets the mood for the entire record. And you listen to this and you're like, oh, well, this is just some dance club shit. No, this is a song celebrating a kid running alongside a third world tourist's Hummer and banging on its door, which I had no idea. I was just like, oh, this is just a banga, like the club banga. And she's like, oh, no. She's trying to say something here. And this is what's cool about MIA. So the song opens with lines from Jonathan Rickman and the Modern Lovers' 1972 Roadrunner. So here, I want to play that. So that's the same lyrics. And not even remotely the same sound, but that's what I love about MIA, because everything about this chick is completely punk rock.
Yeah.
All right, so do you have any thoughts on the song?
Yeah, well, it's, I knew I didn't want to do too much research into, like, I was going to look up, like, the Genius song lyrics and see what each line meant. And I was like, I'm just going to wait and, like, learn as I'm going. Because I know that every song is, like, so layered with different references and stuff. But, yeah, I love this song, the way that it starts out, because you, like, just want to dance to it.
Yeah.
And it just, like, hooks you in. And also that first line is just so catchy.
But when you read the lyrics of it and... You know, like I did, it's like you're going through and like I said, I thought this was like some club hit. But then, you know, Somalia, Angola, Ghana, India, Sri Lanka, Burma, Bamboo, Banga. So these are all the places where kids would be like, you know, please yeah. like help me. And it's like it's almost like this hidden message that I had no idea about. All right, then it goes in to Bird Flu, and this flexes MIA's credibility as a proud and resilient underground outsider versus the world of privilege she was up against. And I think that's all summed up perfectly in this moment right here. Peter, play 103. Protocol to be a Rock-Aware model. That's also the most 2007 line on the record. The cool shit about this is to get the massive beat for this, they recorded 30 drummers in a room playing a South Indian percussion instrument called the Arumi, which is used in temple rituals. Because the thunderous sound was so different from the tighter and snappier drum tracks on records at the time, people told her that the song was going to clear the dance floor. I mean, I don't know. Like, I haven't been to a club in so fucking long that I have no idea what the kids are dancing to. I can't believe I just said the kids.
The kids, the
Jesus
youth.
Jesus Christ. All right, thoughts on this song?
I like the beginning again. It's like another one of those songs that just like grabs you from the start. I like that line about the Rock-Aware model, like the protocol is to be a Rock-Aware model, because MIA is one of the artists who, like, I mean, clearly from all the different places that she picks up, like, lyrics or samples or whatever, she's like so well-rounded and never was the type of artist that's like, I'm gonna use my body or my collaborations on music to get me where I want to be and to like be just like the hot, you know, artist. It was very much about like the message and the music.
So let me ask you a question then, because like you know that I think you're cool.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And I think
that's been established.
But also, like, I think a lot of other comedians, like, think that you're cool. Like, there's something cool about you. And it could be, like, the fact that you're not on heroin and you seem to be on heroin at all times. You're super chill. Do you feel, even the way you dress, do you feel like there's this, like, I don't know, because there's this mythos now about Ali Makovsky that you have to try to maintain that by doing other cool things. Do you have any consciousness about the decisions that you make that to be, because I mean, obviously you want to be perceived as cool.
For
we
sure.
all do.
Yeah,
everybody does.
For sure. I mean, I think like I kind of had an identity crisis getting into stand up because I had just finished high school and dropped out of college and I didn't really know like who I was, you know?
Yeah.
And when I started stand up, I would just kind of dress shitty. Like I would put my hair in a ponytail. I would wear American Apparel zip up hoodies and like light wash denim and no makeup. Cause I was like, that's what you wear. That's a comedian's uniform. You know, I can't be too sexy
the Sarah
or
Silverman,
too ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sarah Silverman.
Yeah. And then I realized like later on, I'm like, oh, I can be like cute and be taken seriously. But then I felt like I wasn't being taken seriously. And I was just kind of being like gawked at cause I was like a young, funny girl. I don't know if that's true, but that was at least my perception at the time. So then I just shaved off all my hair.
I remember that.
And I think that's when, I don't know if shaving your hair makes people take you seriously, because I don't know, but I think it just kind of like something changes where you're like, I felt like I could be more myself without this like attachment to femininity or whatever, like this idea of who I am with hair. It sounds stupid, but like, you know, there is like this attachment. And once I shaved my head, I realized like, oh, I can just like do anything I want and be anything I want. And what I wear and what I do doesn't make me. Like, what's on the outside, how I present myself, isn't who I am on the inside. Yeah. And so after that, I just was like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And yeah, I do. I liked getting back into MIA's stuff and watching her interviews because I'm like, oh, like, I want to be more like her. Just kind of this, like, fierce, brave, like, saying what she wants. And
yeah.
Not doing what is necessarily status quo.
Go on the Super Bowl, give the whole country the middle finger to like 200 million people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
But she was saying that there was so much controversy, at least online, where people were like, I can't believe she just did that. And she talked to the people at the NFL saying, can you show me the complaints, the emails you received? There was only 200.
Yeah.
So it's like they're like this whole outrage culture when really only 200 people sent in emails out of the millions that were watching.
Yeah.
It.
And she said something also very smart, which was like, oh, so I can be sexualized, but yet if I do something, if I just, you know, show a finger, that's, you're against that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's not forget that Janet Jackson pulled her titty out in front of everybody, which
I think it's a conspiracy.
Against titties or against fingers?
I don't know, something.
Okay. We'll figure
that
out.
I'm just getting into conspiracies during COVID.
Oh, please don't.
No, I'm not. I'm joking. I'm joking.
Oh, my God,
I believe anything. Anyone tells me anything, I believe it.
Okay. All right. <Woo-hoo. laughs> All right, boys. So one of the first songs written for the album, most of this first single was recorded in India with MIA's vocals recorded in Trinidad. It both mocks and praises various characteristics of men with references to Jamaican dances over a world beat infusion of West Indian, I'm going to fuck this up, Soca and Sri Lankan Tamil Gana. Gana. That's fun to say. All right. Peter, play 119. How many boys are crazy? How many boys are war? How many boys are ready? How many star a war? How many boys are crazy? How many boys are war? How many boys are ready? How many star a war? Hey now, let me go. Hey now, can we go? So, what's cool about this song is that you, when you hear this on the first listen, you're like, oh, this is like MIA, like being boy crazy. But no, what's really cool about this song is that it's really a song about feminism in comparison. Thoughts on this and why you connected with it?
Yeah, so I realized that I did dance all 4 years in high school. And when I was listening to this album, I realized that we did, one of our dances was to the song Boys. But I also like this song because I think this one's a little bit more clear. Like when you're listening to it, like how many boys are crazy, how many start a war. I don't know. To me, this is more of like a, I don't know. There's so many songs that are like, I miss the boys. I wish I had a boy. I'm so lonely. And yeah. She's like, boys are crazy.
They start wars.
They have too much power.
Yeah.
And I'm not about that.
Okay, well, let's talk about comedy.
Okay.
Because this is, I mean, the comedy scene for forever has been known as like a men's club. But in the last decade, there seems to have been this like steady rise and almost misogynistic breed of comedy fans. And I don't think it's entirely unfair to say that they worship people like, you know, D'Elia and Joe Rogan and stuff like that, and you open for them and you're friends with them. So how do you deal with the toxic masculinity that surrounds the comedy scene?
Yeah, it is hard. I think there's a lot of it's hard because I think there's a lot of internalized misogyny. Like, I mean, I know for me, you know, being raised by mostly my dad, and my dad's somewhat of a womanizer, like growing up in
it. Really?
Oh yeah.
Is it playa?
Oh, Larry? Yeah, hell yeah. Larry
Sup,
loves
Larry?
Ladies.
What you doing, lady? Wanna hang out?
He would. He loves smoking cigars. You guys would have a great time.
Okay.
But you know, growing up with a father, I kind of always viewed, I don't know, we'd be having lunch and he'd like see a girl walk by and like turn his head so aggressively. So that was just like always in my head of like, be presentable for men, you know,
yeah,
like this is what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be good looking and like whatever. And now with comedy, I realize that there still is like, you know, I'm sure have internalized like misogyny that I don't even realize. And I think a lot of guys don't think that they're being misogynistic in certain ways. Cause to them, they're like, yeah, I see women as people. And it's like, whoa, how profound. But it's deeper than that, you know? And so It's just hard because I get so many messages from people who, I don't know if they support me, but they like follow me, but then they'll make, you know, sexual comments where it's like very much about my appearance and not about my stand-up, which is fine. You know, like whatever gets people there, like if it's because they're like, oh, this girl's hot or like she's interesting or whatever.
Yeah.
And then maybe they end up going to a show because of that. And then maybe they are into it. But I don't know. It's hard having people try and fight the idea that women can be funny. Like, there's guys who make YouTube videos being like, I'm going to watch female comedians until I laugh. And it's just a dude reacting to comedy with a stone cold look in his face. Where it's like, why do you even need to do that?
Yeah.
It's like they want to not think that women are funny. It's like they're trying so hard to keep up this like masculine shell.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's frustrating, but I'm not going to like, I don't, my job isn't to try and change people's minds. I don't go on stage being like, I want to do a show for all the dudes who don't think women are funny and like prove them wrong. I just want them to happen to be there and maybe think differently, but I don't. It's not my responsibility.
It's not your responsibility. To educate people. No, God, no. No, and that's unfair that you have to, because, you know, it's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite comics are females. Ali Wong is one of the funniest women I've ever met in my life. So take that, misogynistic men of the world, or named Jimmy, which is our next song.
I love Jimmy.
So this might be my favorite moment on the entire
record.
So good. 23 seconds, Peter. I love that so much. So this is the second single, is a rework cover of Jimmy, 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 Aja from the 1982 Bollywood film Disco Dancer that MIA used to dance to as a child. That makes so much sense because that's all I wanted to do was dance. She rewrote it after British journalist Ben Anderson asked her on a date to tour the genocide-affected regions in Rwanda when she was in Liberia. And also, that date must have been successful because they hooked up. Best line on here, you hit me on AIM and flip me some game. I just love that they gave it.
I miss AIM.
I know, man.
There's so many cultural references in this album.
So many. Did anybody ever hit you on AIM and flip you some game?
I don't think there was too much game. I think there was, you know, middle school game. It was like, so you want to like maybe eat lunch with me tomorrow at school?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I don't know. I'm too scared. And just put on my away message that's like, I'm in a better place.
Sorry. Thoughts on this song on Jimmy?
Jimmy is great. It's so funky and fun. I also just like the name Jimmy Aja.
I know. It's so catchy.
Yeah. And also, did she write the song after visiting the genocided?
I don't know. Hold on.
Because that's a difficult inspiration. I just did a comedy show behind a Holocaust Memorial Museum. At the Pan Pacific. I'm like, am I supposed to be funny behind a Holocaust Museum?
Ooh, nice use of your elements around you. I didn't even think about doing that. That sucks. That's like one of the hot shows right now.
It's not. Let me tell you, it is not.
I know, but it's a spot.
It's a spot.
It is a spot. Let's talk about dates. What's the strangest date you ever had? Because you just went on, was the one yesterday strange?
No, I don't know. It's hard because I feel like I don't really go on like actual dates. I just like meet up with people and like feel it out. So the one yesterday, I re-downloaded Tinder recently and I met up with this guy. We had mutual friends, which was nice. But then, I don't know, it's always just kind of like awkward on the first date and you don't know what to ask. And I've kind of just gone into this thing where I don't try and hold back and be like, tell me about your mom and your sisters. I literally asked him 10 minutes into the date. I said, do you think you're a sex addict? Because he was talking about Tinder and the way that he talks to girls. And so I was just like, I want to know this now.
Yeah.
Until it's too late, you know? So I asked him that. I was just, I don't have a filter anymore.
Good.
And I know I'm only 25, but I'm like, I'd rather just put it all out there. And like ask the questions that I think are important to a potential relationship than like be blindsided down the road.
So what's the strangest date you've ever been on then?
Hmm. One time I went on a date with this guy. It wasn't that the date was strange. We went to a bar and the date was fine and we made out after and it was a sloppy makeout and he was like, want to come back to my place? And I was like, no, like, I'm not interested, like, whatever. And then a week later, I go home and the guy is in my house. It turns out that him and my roommate are like best friends.
Oh, okay.
And we had no idea.
Oh my God, though. All right, that is a little strange.
So then he would be over at my house every week and I'd just have to be like, hey man, what's up?
Good to see you again.
Yeah.
Did you figure out that drool problem? Because your mouth is juicy, baby.
So gross.
Hustle, featuring Nigerian, British, high energy, electronic, grime style rapper, Africa Boy. The sonic concept for this came to MIA when she imagined refugees being smuggled on a boat. She attempted to capture what she thought their banging on the side of the boat would sound like. I do love this part. 2 minutes, Peter.
Police, I try to avoid them. They catch me hustling. They say, deport them.
Hustle, 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 grind, grind, grind. Why does everybody have hustle on their mind? Best chorus on the record?
I think so.
Maybe.
Could be.
But it also sounds like every open mic comic in LA. It's like you got to hustle, hustle, hustle. You got to grind, grind, grind. So this celebrates how third world inhabitants have adopted to do anything to survive and better themselves.
Yeah, it definitely is like, I feel like... listening to that now, it could definitely be like you could interpret it as like the 9-to-5, like corporate America, capitalism,
sure.
Fuck all that.
Yeah. This was also the first song that had Diplo adding production to it. Side note, because we did go out to try to book him on this because he lives in my neighborhood. He lives on the street.
Shut up.
I saw him riding his bike. I see him all the time
riding
his bike.
I'm going to be driving up and down your street.
I mean.
Waiting to see him.
Are you one of the few that are like super, super attractive? There's like women are obsessed with Diplo and Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, no, I don't want to hook up with Diplo, but I'm very fascinated by him. I find him very interesting.
Really? Just
yeah.
A white guy from Philadelphia that dresses like fucking Tom Selleck in the 80s.
That's like, what's very interesting. Like, well, just because of the way that he started his career and how, like, I don't know, I find his origin story very fascinating and now him trying to keep up with the youth and in online culture is really interesting.
I mean, he's a good looking guy.
Good looking, yeah.
Yeah.
Wes.
I mean, yeah. Is that his real name?
Yeah.
Wes. I never met him, but
I think.
But he used to come to Baltimore all the time. So being this is hustle, 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 grind, 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 let's talk about bettering ourselves to be better people. What's the most significant thing you've done to better yourself?
Getting sober definitely helped me a lot, especially being like a young comedian. I think I got sober after doing stand-up for like a year.
Really?
And I was only 20 at that point. So, I don't know. I think that that helped a lot. I really feel like if I hadn't stopped when I did, even though it wasn't necessarily maybe that bad, how other people would perceive like a drinking problem, mine seems pretty minimal. But I think like the way that my reactions to things were very unhealthy, and like my attitude and outlook on any situation I was in was always kind of like obscured and had this weird like fog over it.
Yeah.
So I feel like that helped a lot to have me be more unbiased with like my, you know, just like my, like all the bad characteristics like jealousy or anger
or
fear.
Yeah.
Like it definitely helped me kind of see it in a way where it wasn't like so negative. And I'm like, okay. So I think that helped a lot. And then, I don't know, I think just like trying new things and not making comedy my entire being. Because like I said, I started right after high school. And when I dropped out of school and I kind of was like ingrained in comedy and I still hadn't figured out really who I was without it. And so in a way, I feel like the pandemic helped me because I wasn't doing comedy for like, you know, 4 months, 5 months, whatever. And so I was like, okay, who's Allie when this isn't?
Wow.
Her.
Yeah, that's profound to have that during such a time of crisis.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's so many people that could have, well, I know a lot of people that chose the opposite of that, which is just, you know, I don't know, if I can't do stand up, what am I going to do? And instead of having this opportunity to figure out who you are.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
What did you find out the most about yourself during COVID?
I really like having routine, but I also like being able to get out of my element and like go on trips and just like have new experiences. Like yeah. I drove to Vegas on a whim and it was so much fun just kind of like seeing the city and not having anything to do back here and being able to be free and just like explore things and stop along the way, like not being like, I need to get to Vegas by 4. It's like, no, I can stop in the Mojave.
Yeah.
And like just see these like weird suburban towns that are like kind of tweakered out. And
did you have a photographer with you so you could take one of your hip photos? Oh, get your vibe like this would have been so good if I had just off the 6 here.
Yeah. And then it's nice just having like the family time and being able to like reconnect with them on a more personal level than just stopping by every once in a while.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. You can't just work all the time.
No. And I think that's what I'm realizing now that some shows are opening up. It's like, I don't need to do the show behind the Holocaust Memorial Museum. You know, like I don't need to do any show that's just available to me. Like,
I'm the opposite. I'm doing every show. I just, because this made me fall more in love with stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, because I think that's like we were talking about, like the people that get depressed and how their identity is that this, having it taken away made me go, oh, man, like I really do love it. And all the shit that I used to carry around, mm-hmm. like that you were saying, when I drank, and because when I started doing stand-up, I was an addict. So I kept that baggage. It wasn't only until recently that I started dropping it. But like when I started stand-up again, it's like I'm going up just to have fun. It's not mm-hmm. about anything else other than the moment I'm doing it and enjoying it.
Yeah.
So, and I love a good Vegas trip.
For sure.
Love a good Vegas trip.
I think I'm going to go to Big Bear this weekend.
Do it.
I'm going to find a hot spring.
Oh,
yeah, I've never done a hot spring, so.
They're great.
Yeah.
This next song has slowly become my favorite song on the record. Mango,
no.
Pickle, Down
no.
River. So there's some cool shit about this. So this is a remix with added verses by MIA of the 2002 single by the pre-teenage and teenage Aboriginal Australian rap group, the Wilcannia Mob, or Barkanji Boys, who sing and rap over a beat and a traditional Australian didgeridoo. As they were kids when they first made this, it describes what kids would do for fun before MIA adds her adult perspective. So I want to play two parts.
Okay, great. I like this song, but it's never the first song that I'm picking to play off the album.
This is all new because we're going to get to a song later that reminded me of you. That is the one that I first like fell in love with.
Okay.
That's not Paper Planes. All right. So the first part I want to play. Do you remember a few songs ago when I said that was my favorite moment on the record?
Mm-hmm.
I lied. Peter, play 48 seconds.
My name is Kay from Wakanda Street. I walk on stilts to beat the beat. When it grows here, I shake a leg. This is my rhyme and that's what I said.
First of all, I want to say, I don't really know where you at that way. My name is Maya and people always say.
Oh, Oh my God, that is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. There's an app feature on Instagram stories now where you can kind of have that voice, and it doesn't fuck with your look. So yeah. Once this episode drops, I'm going to be posting me rhyming that. My name is D from the Condor Strip. Fuck, I love that.
It's so cute. And I like knowing the backstory because I was like, who did she hire to do this, like... Yeah, child's rap.
But that's the thing. I'm hoping that's. I don't think that's like a voice recorder thing on it. I'm pretty sure that's his voice. Yeah. Because it kind of reminded me of like when Madlib did Quasimodo. Do you know Quasimodo?
Hmm.
Ooh, and I thought you were cool, man. So like he's like a rapper. Uh-huh. Madlib did this album Quasimodo where he used like that sounding voice to do all these different raps.
But the rap just also reminds me of like when you're a kid and you're like rhyming cat with hat. You're like, my name is Allie and I like to play. I don't hear what you say.
Yeah, it's incredible. All right,
it's
hold
on. So pure and wholesome.
Quasimodo rapper, I just want to make sure I get this right. Yeah, I was right. Is a side project from producer Madlib from Oxnard. Oh my God, they have a really dope show up there at a dog park I've been hitting. Yeah, dude, Madlib. So it's Lord Quaz is known for his high pitched voice, which often interacts with Madlib's regular voice. God, I love it. Peter, play a little bit of Quasimodo.
Today is the shadow of tomorrow. Today is the present future of yesterday. Yesterday is the shadow of today. The darkness of the past.
All right.
Yesterday.
The next one I want to play is at 108. This is MIA's best line off the record.
My name is Maya. People always say I act kind of strange, like a dubo way. I like fish and mango pickle. When I climb trees, then feed them pickle. I'm broke this month, didn't pay rent. I had to jump down, and the money's all spent.
Dude.
Them feet, them tickle.
First she says Deja way, which I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means.
No, but we'll find out. I like fish and mango pickle. When I climb trees,
my feet.
Them feet. Them tickle.
Them feed them tickle.
You win, MIA. You win. I'm a fan for life now. Thoughts on this?
It's a cute song.
Cute?
Yeah, it is cute. It's cute. There's kids on it.
But that fucking didgeridoo is a Yeah,
it's like the song is like the musical experience of Whippets.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. So I wanted to ask you, because we're talking about him being with these teenage people. How did Little Allie come about?
Oh, my God. My radio days?
Yeah, I have no idea about this.
Oh, yeah, when I was a little kid, I grew up in Los Angeles County in Long Beach.
What? LBC?
Whoop. And, you know, Kiss FM was a very popular radio station. I have two older sisters, so I never grew up listening to, like, kids' music. It was always, like, top 40 radio hits. And we're getting ready for school, listening to Kiss FM. Ryan Seacrest is, you know, the host of it. And I try calling in. My sister doesn't let me. She tries calling in. And so when she left for school, I hit redial on the phone and I get through. And I'm like 7 years old. And, you know, my parents are divorced. So I'm just like, you know, emotionally
broken.
Yeah. So I know how to have conversations with adults because I'm like constantly apologizing for my parents' behavior at a young age. So I get on the phone with Ryan and I'm just like having a full conversation with him. But my voice sounds like one of those kids in the song where I'm like, hey, Ryan, like my name is Allie. And I ask him for Britney Spears tickets, and I sing a Britney Spears song for him. I sang Toxic.
I don't know why that popped in my head, but that was the one that I was thinking.
Yeah,
was
so I'm 7 years that. Old singing The Taste of Your Lips. I'm on a ride. I finish the song, and he goes, we don't have Britney Spears tickets, but we have American Idol tickets. And I'm so upset. Like, the audacity of him to offer American Idol tickets after I've asked for Britney Spears is like,
this
you
is
know,
like 2004, crazy. Which means it's probably like
it's 2003.
You know, so it's Ruben Studdard and Clay.
This
Aiken.
Is American Idol prime.
Yeah, I mean it's a prime, but it's also
but it's no Britney Spears.
Who was it? Who's there?
I don't remember, but
not Taylor Houghton. Remember the guy who was all like blues singer? He's like.
I don't remember who it was, but I just remember I was so disappointed, and I said, "Yeah, I guess I'll only go if they're VIP." And so we just have this back and forth. I end up going to American Idol. I call back after another morning and I said, like, yeah, it was fine. The seats were really far back, though. And we're just going back and forth. And so then he's like, we have this idea, come into our studio. And my dad drove me up and we made like 3 prank phone calls to see if it would work. And it ended up being like a super big hit. Like people loved it. And so I did it for 4 years. I would make a week's worth of prank phone calls, leave school early and pre-record them. And yeah.
That is incredible. I'm actually also shocked that your dad had the time to drive you there in between getting pussy.
Yeah, me too. But I think that to him, this was more of a way for him to get even more pussy.
Yeah.
He was like, do you listen to Kiss FM by chance? Yeah, my daughter's on the radio. You want a bone?
I love that. Oh, that's so great. All right. The next song I mentioned earlier, I played this at the strip club, $20. So this was written about the ease of buying an AK-47 assault rifle in war-torn Liberia. Liberia, thank you.
Labia.
War-torn labia.
I've been there.
The music sounds like, to me, I wrote New Order's 1983 song Blue Monday, but chopped up. Do you know that song?
But then it also has the, with your feet on the
Yes. So that, I was just about to say that for the chorus, for all the Fleece Army out there listening, if you didn't catch this, the chorus... MIA sings a less melodic version of the Pixies' 1988 song, Where Is My Mind? Let's hear it. I had no idea. I until I went through the notes that I have written for me, I was like in shock. And it's just once again, it's like this is what makes her cool.
Yeah.
It's just that this is a club banger, a strip club song. This is like sex music, and yet it's about how kids can buy guns and how it's easier to buy guns than get food. And then she's got these lyrics that I pulled out too that might be the best lyrics on the record, even the opening. War, talking about you, such a bore. I'd rather talk about moi. Like, do you know the cost of AKs up in Africa? I just love that, man.
She's so smart.
So smart.
Yeah.
Way smarter than I even, and I, like I said at the beginning, it's like I knew she was cool. I knew there was something about her that I found very, very interesting. But it's like to find out that there's this layer of this is what I experienced. And like I don't know if there's a lot of other, you know, fucking, I don't think LaRue is fucking, you know, writing these deep existential songs about war-torn countries.
But I think that's what makes MIA such a unique artist is her upbringing and how that influences her music and why it's so hard to put her into a genre.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, you have like this fun dance type music, but then you also have like pop elements to it and then these samples that kind of make it like soft and... There's just so many different influences that make it hard to just pinpoint.
Completely. All right, World Town. This was based on the instrumentation of the Sri Lankan temple music she would wake up to as a child. It was influenced by the child soldiers in various third world countries, including Liberia and Sri Lanka. Peter 101.
See me bubbling quietly. See me acting like you aiming me. See me bad up.
So this has a very special place in my heart because I call my niece Sophia. I call her Nini. So I'm going home in like 3 days. I'm going to just be like, Sophia, a Nini, Nini, Sophia, a Nini, Nini. Thoughts on this?
I mean, I feel like a broken record, but the songs are just so fun. Like, this is such a great album to listen to when you're like driving at night, like on your way somewhere, just like having a good time.
Yeah. This is, you know, this is one of the more clubbier songs. Then The Turn, the next song. This song's about the perseverance and survival of the neglected and unheard. This is also probably the closest thing to a ballad on the record. I want to play a little taste of that before we move on.
The war in me makes a warrior, like a pit bull getting with the terrier. I'm better off in North Korea, yeah, dropping from a barrel of a carrier. Cause I got enough to be more, it's hard enough to get more. Shut the door and everything, just
not my favorite.
Yeah.
Don't dislike it, but just everything else is so, like, you know, bass heavy, danceable. This is, you know, even like $20 you could dance to. This one, on the other hand, like I said, it's just, it's not a love song, but if there was a ballad on the record, this would be it. All right, XR2.
Oh, I like this one.
Do you? Uh-huh. You know, well, you want to know why?
Why?
You like it? Because it's the most Diplo song on the record. Peter, play 10 seconds in.
Where were you in 92? 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 92, 92, 90, 90, 92.
So,
let me guess, it's about something awful. I'm like, why do I want to shake my ass to genocide?
Yeah. It's a nostalgic look back at what MIA and her friends were up to in the London rave scene of 92.
Thank God.
When she was 17 or 18, when 25 people died tragically from a Molly poisoning. I added that last part. No, I added that last part because you set it up. So that was Baltimore Club. That was 100% Baltimore Club. I can hear Spank Rock in it. I hear Diplo. I hear Jesse Titsworth. All the guys that I used to hang out with, excluding Diplo. We'd been in the same room together, but I had no idea how much he was going to blow up. I would have cadoodled to him a little bit closer. The title refers to the popular sports model of the mid to late 80s compact car, the Ford Fiesta.
Oh.
Yeah. She also rattles off a list of initials of pop culture icons, including MC5, SWV, TLC, REM, NYC, and MTV.
ALI.
So you like this song.
Oh, yeah. It makes me feel like I'm at, like, a Vegas pool party.
Yeah, it's, dude, this is, you would have fucking loved the Baltimore club scene. It was so great. It was just the best. Sonar, my buddy Evan that used to throw these huge parties, biggest raves in the East Coast, he threw constantly. He's actually now, during COVID, you know, people like doing different shit just to kind of like, well, I don't know, I can't do that anymore, so what do I do? And in his free time, he started making pizzas, and now he's opening up a restaurant. They're blowing up. He FedExed me two of the best pizzas I've ever had in
Amazing.
My life. It's called Underground Pizza Maryland on Instagram. So I wanted to ask you this. What initially drew you towards your career?
Stand-up?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I always liked getting attention, and I always liked making people laugh, and I was always kind of like seeking validation from strangers.
There it is.
And I didn't realize it was even like a possibility to do stand-up. I thought you just like got lucky and, I don't know, it just worked out. And so I was going to the Laugh Factory a bunch in high school using my sister's ID to get in, and I was there on like a new material night. And someone took out their notes, and I was like, wait, they're not just thinking of all this? Like, they're not just telling stories that they're thinking of? And so I was like, okay, well, then that means that if I write something, I can perform it. And so then once I figured that out, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. Like, it all just kind of, like, clicked in that moment. And that was it.
So where was the first show?
My first open mic was at the Laugh Factory.
That was the one you went to?
I had no idea that there were other places. I didn't even know that you could start other places. Like, I remember being like 3 months into stand-up and someone was like, yeah, I started in Portland. And I'm like, they have comedy in Portland?
What?
Yeah.
Portland?
I was very naive, but I'm glad that after that I started going to coffee shops and bars and wherever. But yeah, that was my first open mic.
With the old guy? With the old guy, Herv or whatever his name is,
the guy who would
is
like light you, or
he would
take
light you,
off stage?
And because you're not allowed to cuss at the Laugh Factory open mic. And the first time, we, Gerard, Byron, and Angelo, we waited there all day. The day week before we sign up, you come back the next week, and then I go up, and you're not allowed to cuss at all. And I was like, and the first thing I said was like, oh fuck, and he goes, thank you, all right, next comic, and I was like, that was it. That's out of all the open mics that I've ever done. And not just because I got kicked off the first time. Yeah. That's the shittiest one.
Oh, yeah. Because it's all like tourists.
I mean, there were people there for you?
It was tourists who were like trying to do an open mic while they were in town so they could go back home and tell people that they're a successful American comedian.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you realize you could bring notes because, I mean, if you never would have gone, who knows where you'd be?
Yeah, probably like in an alley.
What do you think you would have done if you didn't do stand-up?
I think I probably would have gone... I honestly have no idea. I probably would have picked up a trade, like hair or makeup or something, but I don't think...
I could see that.
It probably would have been short-lived, though. I probably would have gotten very over it and then just worked some random... I really can't picture...
Anything else?
What I would have done.
This is what you're supposed to be doing. It is. But also, you saying hair and makeup, 100% millions of girls that have done my hair and makeup have kind of dressed like you. They're cool.
For sure.
They drink, you know, or ex-drinkers.
Yeah. I think like, if I wasn't doing stand-up at this point, though, truck driving would be so cool.
I mean, it would be awesome, but you had ice road truck. All right. We're here at the Hit. Paper Planes. Do I need to play some of it? Why not? You know, you kind of have to. All right, Peter, play 56.
When I was just listening to that, it makes me think if that song would be popular now that gun violence is so prevalent.
Ooh, I actually think that we're going to mention something about that. First of all, it was commentary. The cash register and the gunshots, sound effects were commentary on American capitalism and mocking of anti-immigration stereotypes. So... it's not like she's just doing it for the hipness of the song.
Yeah.
She has a point to it. The other thing that I thought was really cool, that Diplo got this main sample from The Clash's 1982 song, Straight to Hell. And I listened to it. It's incredible. Peter, play a little bit of The Clash song. This is what I love so much about sampling your music. I love seeing where someone gets the idea and then, you know, changes it to do this.
Yeah.
It's just like for Diplo to hear that and be like, oh, yeah, that's the fucking shit right there. That's the shit we need to use. But it also, once again, solidifies what I said earlier about MAA being so cool. And the fact that they're sampling The Clash, and The Clash is like the coolest.
Yeah.
And they're also the most political band there might have ever possibly been. It just feels like a perfect marriage.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time. A secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thoughts on this? Tell me about, like take us back, because this was the one.
This was the one. And you texted me before this saying, like I can't listen to this song anymore, you know, because it was so popular.
So popular.
But I think if I were to have heard this for the first time, I would still love it. I don't know. There's something about it that's so good, and the sound effects were so catchy, and I don't know, I still love the song, but it has been so overplayed that it can be exhausting to listen to.
I think that's the thing that when I listen to this record, I listened to it a couple times, and then I just started skipping it because I was like, yeah, it's just all the other shit is like new to me, and this one was just jammed down my throat to the point where, you know, you love it. So the first time you hear it, and then you're just like, oh, I never want to hear that song again. This is one of those songs. It was that popular. So she said this was really a Baltimore, Brooklyn song due to her immersion in the city's street cultures. This is one of the most covered rap songs of all time.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Clearly, it reflects the ire she felt after being denied a visa to the USA for possibly having terrorist ties.
Yeah, so the article that Lynn Hirschberg wrote about her, it's kind of up for debate if she was telling that story to kind of give herself this narrative of, you know, how America's racist and, you know, being from a place like Sri Lanka, people just assume you're a terrorist or like her dad's ties or whatever. But I guess the heat was that she was claiming she was denied a visa because of terrorist ties, when really no one, you never find out why you're denied a visa. So it was like kind of controversial, but abolish ICE, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, dude. All right. I like I said, this was that one song that it's like you can't not talk about this record without mentioning this one.
Also, the confusing thing is that this record is named after her mom, but none of the songs
are about her
mom. Directly about her mom.
We heard the album before this was named after her dad.
Oh,
and
okay.
I don't know.
Got it.
This is more about her dad. That maybe the last record was about her mom,
maybe.
And then the next one after that was named after her third cousin, and then the one after that was named after the guy that makes the mango pickle that she really likes. All right, so we were talking about the songs that reminded me of you.
Oh yeah.
So this, the final song on the record, it was like the second I heard this moment I'm about to play, I was like, this is Ali Bukowski.
Oh, I can't wait to hear.
All right, here we go. Play the opening of Come Around.
Check my curtain and I pay the dollar. Psychic rings, what's up, holla? Text the address, I'll see you later. Baby, calm down. Calm down, calm down, calm down. Run down, run down, run down. Run back around, back around, back around, back around, back around, back around, down.
When she goes, holla. I don't know why, I don't even know if I've ever heard you say holla, but it made me think of you. It's because maybe it was just, it's not like holla. It's just like holla. I could just, it's just not really like energy to it. It just kind of reminded me of you.
Yeah.
Please don't take it as like an insult. It's just, but I heard this song and I was like, I have a feeling Allie loves MIA and this song. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right. I mean, you brought me on for the right album.
Yeah.
100%.
So this is the cool story about this song. Even though she had originally planned on doing the record primarily with Timbaland, her visa issues prevented her from coming into the country, which made her then have to go around the world to work with other producers. So if her visa doesn't get denied, the entire record sounds like this song.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what would have happened. It was like almost a godsend blessing. Like, we might not be talking about this record on the list if she doesn't get denied that visa, because the whole thing was she was going to work the entire record with Timbaland.
I do have a conspiracy about that.
Hit me.
I was watching an interview where she was talking about not wanting to be the girl who's in a Timbaland song, talking about like hooking up with guys and all that stuff. So part of me almost thinks that she did that on her own, being like, hey, Timbaland, sorry, but I can't make it to the U.S. Visa got denied. So that way she wouldn't be forced into making this, like, you know, sexualized female poppy.
Like Nelly
yeah.
Furtado.
Yeah.
Because remember Nelly Furtado? I'm like a bird. Turn off
the
lights.
And promiscuous girl.
Then promiscuous girl's like, yeah, I'm going to fuck you, yeah. fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Look at my butt. Look at my butt. But I'm a promiscuous girl. I do like that song.
It's a good song.
I also like Maneater a lot, too. Maneater, get your life. Gotta make his head. Get your work. Buffalo. Oh, it's on and on? I thought it was
I don't
buffalo.
Know. I just had a
I always sang it. Buffalo. Get your work on, get your sleep on, get your work on, Buffalo. Also, the ending part with the rap by Timbaland.
I don't care for it.
Yeah, and I didn't like that he kept saying Timbaland ain't dead, because I think he was trying to alert the world that his career isn't dead, because he did take some time off, because he was like the hot dude
yeah.
for a while. I do want to play this part, so it's another double dip, Peter. This is my favorite line, maybe not just from the song, but maybe from the entire record. Play 49 seconds.
Indian tribesmen gamble spades, Indian chicks they get men laid, milk and honey, smoke high grade, golds and diamonds, gems and jade, ride up on our tanks in vain, blow up things to save our name.
I love that so fucking much. I love you, MIA, if you're listening to the podcast, because I know you are.
She's checking in.
Oh, God. She just had a kid. Well, I don't know. I mean,
I think like 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
I mean, her and Nora Jones, I'm so attracted to. I love Nora Jones.
Nora,
if you're listening to this, Nora, I just want you to know I am single. I'm not sexually active. I actually turned down a booty call last night.
Whoa.
Because I wanted to sit on my couch and eat ice cream. Don't tell the girl that. I told her I was busy. But that's the guys
you
I
were busy.
I was busy
eating ice cream,
doing nothing, and yeah. watching Cops because I found Pluto TV. You
oh,
know
amazing.
About?
Oh, I've God. Heard
there's,
about it.
There's a whole channel of all Cops, and I love that show. You're not supposed to like Cops anymore, but I don't give a fuck. I love it. So I wanted to ask you this, because being she says this in the song, when has someone stepped on your dick, metaphorically, of course?
Stepped on your dick? Because now people are saying. Step on my neck like as like a cool thing, like if you see like a hot guy or a hot girl, you're like, step on my neck, it's like a compliment.
Really?
So is step on my dick like a bad thing? Like I'm not sure what the
so basically, you know, it's kind of Timbaland like taking over and like in a sense being like, hey, I know you were supposed to work with me but you couldn't because of the visa issues, but I'm going to hijack this record and I'm going to completely just make this about me. So when has somebody stepped on your metaphorical dick?
I don't know. That's hard to say.
It's a good question, though.
Yeah, it's a great question. I feel, oh.
We have the hard-hitting questions on the 500.
Yeah, it's great.
when you get, it's like, I thought we were just talking about Jackson Browne.
Yeah.
No, tell me about when you got molested.
I feel like... When I was doing this one show and I felt like I wasn't getting the kind of respect or credit for my involvement, and so I think that was a time where I felt like my dick was being stepped on and I had to kind of just distance myself and be like, you know what, I'm gonna do my own thing and no hard feelings, but like I don't want to just be like a side piece of, you know, what we're creating.
Yeah.
You know?
What was the thing? You mind me asking?
Yeah, I used to run a show when I first started, and I had a friend running it with me, and I don't know, I felt like my efforts weren't being noticed.
Yeah.
So that was kind of it.
No, that's definitely Dick Stephan.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, look who's fucking doing all the yeah. shows now. Is that person still doing it?
No.
Ha ha! You're stepping on their dick.
It's always people who are insecure or kind of have this foresight that things aren't going to work out, and that's why they want to take over and not give you the credit.
100%. All right, you want to do some facts and get out of here?
Sure.
MIA's mother, Kala Pragazam, who this album is named after, spent 30 years hand-sewing the medals given out by Buckingham Palace.
Whoa.
Earlier this year, MIA dedicated the MBE for service in music she had pinned on her by Prince William to her mother. It was one her mother had made.
Whoa.
Wow. What is something about your family of which you are most proud?
Really, the tough questions.
Yeah, dude, hard hitting, bro.
I don't know. I feel like the past 2 years we've all celebrated holidays together, and that's like, I don't know. I feel like that's something like special because, you know, since I was 5 or 6, they've been divorced, and so it's always like 2 Christmases,
yeah,
2 everything, and so it's nice that we're all able to like come together now, and just it also it's just time efficient.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Wait, so wait, was it your dad's promiscuity that kind of broke it up?
No, I think it. Well, no, I think I feel like it was financial.
Yeah, that was my parents would have gotten divorced over money. I don't know why they stayed together, but yeah, dude, money is always like the root of so much. Like that, just because that's that create that. Because once you don't have money, then you notice everything else.
Yeah,
do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
It's it like, puts a real magnifying glass on the other problems.
Yeah. So what, you guys are doing holidays together this
year?
Yeah.
And I think I'm just like proud of, you know, the fact that I have like very supportive parents and like my family's pretty close. Not in like an annoying way where we do everything together, but like we do make the time to be with each other. And my parents are both like, you know, they never went to college. They both are longshoremen and they've been able to like.
Really?
Yeah.
Like
on the docks.
Like on the docks.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, both of them are longshoremen.
I feel like I've seen pictures of your family and neither of them look like
no.
Mark Wahlberg in The Perfect Storm.
Yeah.
Like they all look like normal, like Orange County people.
Totally. So I don't know. I'm grateful for my upbringing where I had parents who just like worked these union jobs and raised us to be like somewhat normal.
That's insane, dude. Because you have such like, I've seen like your sisters. Everybody's beautiful.
Yeah.
I've seen you dressed up like
yeah.
in normal clothes that aren't neon colored. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. It's like, she's like a legit normal. She's not Karen O from the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs all the time.
Yeah.
Like she's, that's awesome, man. Dude, I knew that's why we connect. My dad was he wasn't a longshoreman, but he was an orchid man.
Whoa.
So yeah. So, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but we never had insects in our house. No way. During the Los Angeles Dodgers' 3-week attempt to win the 2008 National League West title, they used Paper Planes as their rally song.
That makes sense.
I feel like everybody did
yeah.
at the time. You go to any sporting event and people were playing that song, even at the Big Wangs. In 2009, at the 51st Grammy Awards, right before a rap rock performance by Jay-Z, Lil Wayne, Kanye West, and T.I., MIA came out and stole the show while singing the hook from Paper Planes, which is sampled for their song Swagga Like Us. Cool thing is you could see she was visibly 9 months pregnant.
Yes, I remember
and
that.
One day past due to have her first child. That is so fucking bad. That's
so cool.
That's what I'm talking about MIA, why she's cool. Cause that's like, and that's why it's perfect for you to do this. Cause it's like, she's up there with like the most boys of the boys club in rap. And she's still fucking just popping out and fucking ripping it. What's the hardest gig you've ever played?
Honestly, it's like the insignificant ones are the hardest for me. Not, I don't want to say insignificant, but it's like, you know, it's like the Holocaust Memorial shows that can be the most difficult
yeah.
because it's just not the right environment for stand-up. But I think that those are also the most helpful because it's like if you can make something work
there,
then like, you know, you can make it work in a theater or an
yeah.
arena or something like that, you know, where
yeah.
it just sets you up for success when you need to be ready for that.
Yeah, because this is like comedy. This is comedy boot camp right now.
Yeah.
Because we're not playing in clubs. We're playing in the most random places by creeks, Holocaust museums,
yeah.
fucking museum steps. So yeah, I completely agree with you. What was the best show you've ever done?
Oh my God, doing my first arena with Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
The coolest experience of my life. Because it's like when I was a kid, I would go to concerts all the time and go to these huge arenas and watch the artists perform. And every time I would leave a concert, I would feel so depressed because I was like, I want to be able to perform. Like, I want to be able to like command people's attention and like have people engaged and entertained, and I would always leave with this empty feeling. And so to be performing in a space that I always like looked up to was so surreal and the best.
But yeah, but I heard you bombed, though.
No.
I'm kidding. I heard you crush city. All right. When making the video for Paper Planes, MIA locked herself in her apartment for 2 hours after her manager forbid her from wearing a Metallica T-shirt. She finally got her way. I don't really remember.
That's random.
I don't really remember the music video.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know why Metallica was such a, you know, a sticking point.
Yeah. Maybe. I just considered the Hangover movie being one long music video for Paper Planes.
All right. Have you ever had to deal with censorship or having your art fucked with?
No, but I think like self-censorship. After, you know, sometimes things get taken out of context or people try and like find the worst in a joke and, you know, spin it into a negative light. It's like, okay, well, there's this fine line between, is this funny enough to say it, or am I maybe trying to provoke something, or be a little bit too like controversial, or maybe a half-baked idea that doesn't really need to be said, or on my Instagram story or something. So I think, like, I don't think anyone has necessarily censored me, but I think, you know, after, you know, certain things that I've said and getting feedback, realizing maybe I should just take a little bit more precaution and consider what I'm saying.
Especially in this day and age.
For sure.
All right, last one. The bright and colorful and garnished cover of this album was inspired by African art and featured an image of MIA surrounded by the repeated slogan, "Fight on, fight on, fight on." What has been the defining struggle in your life?
Comedy related or no?
Could be about it, just life.
I think especially during, like, kind of what I mentioned earlier, like sense of purpose and who I am at my core is kind of an ongoing thing. And especially like without comedy, when it was, you know, just not happening, just that constant struggle of like, what are my like core beliefs? I think that that's something that I always kind of deal with, because I'm very influenced by people around me, so it's something to be aware of. Like, am I influenced by people around me in a good way? Like, is it positive to my life? Like, am I being inspired and influenced in a way that helps me grow, or am I being influenced in a way where I want to have a certain feeling to feel a part of or feel belonging, even if it's not necessarily the place that I would want to belong?
Yeah,
I think that's like an ongoing thing, but something that I'm getting better at.
Just lean into who you are.
Yeah.
You're just great. Like, you're great. Everything you're doing is great. Your style, your comedy, you as a human being is just great. So just lean the fuck in to whatever alley is.
Yes.
And all the other people, let them do their shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But you're in a really good place. This was fantastic, Allie. Once again, sorry about the bullshit at the beginning.
All good.
I don't know if everybody knows this, but we spent like literally 45 minutes trying to get this set up because Allie was the first person we've had back in the studio, aka my apartment, in months. I actually cleaned the place for you.
Thank you.
A little bit. Not like the bathroom is immaculate.
Yeah.
Anything you want to promote?
I have a podcast called Resting Bitch. If you want to see me perform, you can go to AllieMakovsky.com or follow me on Instagram at NotAllieMac.
Yeah, and book her. We both have the same agent. Sylvia Lund. I was talking about you yesterday, and he was like, oh, I rep Allie too.
Because the DC shows got canceled.
Yeah, dude.
Bummer.
Fucking COVID! This was great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. What did I tell you? What did I tell you? The one and only Allie Makovsky. Guys, check out her podcast, Resting Bitch with Allie Makovsky. Her Instagram at NotAllieMac, her Twitter NotAllieMac, and her website for all things Allie, AllieMakovsky.com. Guess what, guys? For new music this week, we are highlighting Chris Sullivan again. Chris was on the podcast back in June from Mule Variations. He's a good buddy of mine. I really hit it off with this guy. I really like him, and his music is incredible. He's making music under the title Joseph the Spouse. We talked about it in the episode, and he's got a new album entitled 6 Feet from Under. It's incredible, and it was co-written by another guest of ours, Taylor Goldsmith of the band Dawes. You're listening to Raising the Bar. You hear that? Sounds good. And that's another great track from that record, 6 Feet from Under, which you can get everywhere, guys. Get it on Spotify, get it on Apple Music, get it on wherever you get your music. Follow Chris's band on Instagram at Joseph the Spouse. We've got the links on our website. And if you're in a band and you want your music featured on the 500, send us your song to 500podcasts@gmail.com. Put the album and artist that influenced you in the deadline. Guess what, guys? Next week is our first Beatles record, their final studio record, Let It Be, even though they released Abbey Road after. Well, they recorded Abbey Road. We'll find out next week. All I know is it's dope. It opens with two of us. I'm so excited. Listen to the album. You got homework. Stay fleecy. Happy Thanksgiving. Doogle doogle. And oh, this mess I'm in.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Next Chapter Podcasts.